All right, we've been dealing with the concepts of active and passive virtue as opposed to active and passive arrogance. It is obvious to most of you at this point that what makes a marriage successful is the area of both active and passive virtue as opposed to active and passive arrogance. Under point C, in active virtue, the man's volition has two directions in marriage. In active virtue, the woman's volition has two directions in marriage. The two in the case of the male or the man is impersonal love, firstly, for all mankind, which develops capacity for personal love. And then secondly, personal love for his wife, which is the function of the husband in marriage. In the case of the woman, her active virtue, the woman's volition has two directions. One, obedience and response to the love of her husband, and then two, the training and the teaching of their children. Again, the key to the whole thing is that love becomes motivation for communication. And having dealt with this thus far, I felt that this is a marvelous place to introduce the doctrine of virtue love. So far, we've been dealing with virtue simply as an expression, whether it be active or passive. But we're going to see of all the virtues that are mentioned in the Word of God, the greatest is virtue love. That, of course, is taken from the Corinthian passage, which says, the King James uses the word charity, unfortunately. It's referring to virtue love. And then you know in the concluding verse it says, there is hope, and then it goes on and says, and love, and the greatest of these is what? Virtue love. So the greatest thing that you can have toward one another in a marriage relationship is virtue love. Now, what is it that builds virtue love? What is virtue love the result of? In other words, how is it developed in the life of the believer? If you are ever going to have a successful relationship with your right woman or right man, it's going to be based on virtue love and nothing else. As we have already found out, it's obvious that the areas of attractability doesn't hack it. Attractiveness may have its primary stage in simply getting you to the point where you recognize the fact that each other exists. But the attraction stage, as we have pointed out repeatedly, is the most superficial of all. It's the least foundational. It has the least stability. As a matter of fact, after a while, there is no stability. Why? Because the two can very easily become distracted to each other if they have nothing else to build upon. The attraction stage has no value whatever in establishing a meaningful relationship in marriage. But virtue love does. So with that, let's take it up, and I've tried to reduce it down to, instead of 30 pages, to about 5. So we are going to go over it rather quickly, so I would suggest you write quickly. If you can't write quickly, listen quickly. If you can't write quickly or listen quickly, get the tape. All right, virtue love, point A. This is a matter of background, and it's important that you understand where all virtue love stems. God's love is the source, pattern, and basis of human love. One, God is eternal, infinite, and perfect. Therefore, his love is eternal, infinite, and perfect. I think when we study the attributes of God, we are immediately confronted with a situation in the fact that when you are talking about God, you cannot say he possesses a thing, but rather that he is that thing. For example, God doesn't possess perfection. He is perfection. God doesn't have love. He is love. Now, there's a vast difference in saying that somebody has love, because that would suggest they acquired it from somewhere, some source. But when you say that God is love, then He becomes the ultimate source of all love. One of the first little things that I made up and that I learned as a young believer was this: the absence of God in a relationship is the absence of love. Why? Because God is love. And if there is no God, there is no love. And if God is not an integral part of that relationship, nor can love be an integral part of that relationship. Because you cannot exclude God and say you love. Now, of course, the word love today is probably one of the most loosely used words in the English language. We've already described how some people love carrots. On the other hand, there are those that hate them. There are those who claim they love broccoli. On the other hand, there are those that detest it with a passion. It's beyond hatred. In my area, broccoli is second to dung. And so I guess you can see what that is in my field of green vegetables. All right, God is love, God is eternal, God is infinite, God is perfect. Therefore, His love is infinite, His love is eternal, His love is perfect. Two, since God is love and always has been love and always will be love, God does not fall in love, nor can God's love be compromised or corrupted in any way. He doesn't change His direction of love. His love is always there as a source. The difference being, when we refer to man having a personal love relationship with God, the love of God is always there but cannot come through, because the believer who has not reached maturity blocks the way of that love penetrating and being used into his life. It isn't that God all of a sudden decides, well, now this person has reached maturity, and so I'll start loving him. No, no, no. The love of God is always there. It is always constant. It is unchangeable. It is immutable. And since it is eternal, and it is infinite and perfect, it can never cease to be anything less than. It does not diminish nor increase. So God doesn't fall in love. Whereas in human love, we fall in love and out of love. And somewhere in the course of our study of marriage, we're going to see what happens when a couple fall out of love. I was thinking about this on the way here. Developing any relationships takes a long period of time. It really does. Anything that's meaningful in life is a steady progress upward. And my wife and I were discussing on the way to class tonight, taking in doctrine, for example, and reaching a particular place in your plateau of spiritual growth takes a long time. Let's say it's taken you 5 years to reach a particular place in your Christian advance. The problem is the downslide is so much faster. You can lose everything you built in 5 years in less than 6 months. I've seen it in some cases where it only took 3 to 4 months. And the individual just simply wiped out. They just wiped clean all that they had built upon. I think it's somewhat the same as how long it takes you to program a computer. It takes you an awful lot of time to put all that info in. But there's one command that'll take it all out. Just like that. Just wipe that thing clean. One little silly command. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. If you don't know, because I left it on the machine in the office, and somebody vindictively might go in there one day and decide they're going to try that and see if it actually works. It will work. The suggestion was to remove that command because it's not an integral part of the working of the machine. I think I'll do that tonight. The command is format. And it's just a little word, format. To most of you, it doesn't have any meaning at all, but to anybody that works with a computer, it's a terrifying word, unless you're doing floppies. But when you start messing around with a hard drive, I reformatted a hard drive today. And boy, you want to see how many times I made sure I was in the right drive. Because I've got two of them. And I kept looking. You in D drive? Yeah, I kept saying D drive. All right. And then when it finally said, are you sure? And then it has you write in, yes. Doesn't even ask for a Y in this program. And so I typed in Y-E-S. Now I still have to push enter. And I looked again. Is it D? Because I transferred everything to my C hard drive, and I wanted to clean up my D hard drive. And then when I did, it was so lovely to see D being formatted. Horror when the light comes on in C drive, and you know, uh-oh, where do you stop it at that point? Say, quickly turn the machine off. Mm-hmm. Then you have a mess. See, somebody did that here recently. I got a telephone call from them. Oh, they're not here. Okay. Love is a slow developing relationship. Now, to destroy that love, you could do that in 5 minutes. Operation adultery. Operation fornication. Point three, this incorruptibility of God's love is the basis for stability factor in human love. Repeat, the incorruptibility of God's love is the basis for the stability factor in human love. It, as well as God's love, cannot be corrupted if it is true love. You see, if it's not true love, then it's very easily corruptible and penetratable. Remember what I said to you on Friday or Thursday, it was sometime during last week, about putting up your protective shields. Those protective shields simply reinforces your love for your opposite number. And you never allow those shields to come down. You never lower your shields. Because as soon as you do, you're no longer an impregnable fortress. You see, your love surrounds you like a wall. And as soon as you allow those shields to come down, then the Klingons of hate take over. And their missiles then are penetrating your resources, and eventually you are destroyed. The Bible calls them by different names. It simply calls them the fiery darts of the evil one. What's the difference? The Greek has a better term. It says the fiery missiles of the evil one. Now, I'm sure they didn't understand the same use of the word missile that we use today. A missile in the ancient world was anything that was projectable. An arrow was considered a missile. And of course, bows and arrows and spears and swords and shields and helmets and breastplates were used as an analogy for the warfare of the believer. Well, we don't have that type of warfare today. We don't need. Can you imagine going into modern warfare dressed like the Roman soldier? He may have been great in his day. Gets out in the middle of the field and he says, you know, honor, integrity, whatever, and gives the Marine hoot, and somebody picks him off with a 30-06 from 300 yards. He never even got close. And down he goes, sword in hand. A whole legion of Roman soldiers wouldn't do a hoot with one A-bomb. You see? But if your shields are up, you're totally protected. You see, the integrity of God protects himself. And the integrity of the believer protects himself. You see, God has established a pattern in the life of the born-again believer. You want to lower your shields? You want to go out in life and just simply live it as unto yourself, putting God in second, third, fifth, ninth place, not having his proper priority? Don't expect blessing and don't expect success, but failure and discipline. You see, you're bought with a price. The price was the blood of Christ. He paid the awful price. Well, Paul says he's a debtor. I say to you that he owns you. You don't own yourself. He purchased us. And therefore, he has the full right to expect what he expects without coercion. That's the beauty of the thing. You see, in all this, the integrity of God still allows the use of our volition, even though that gets us into serious problems. God is so fair, and he doesn't possess fairness. He is fairness. Point four, because God is immutable, his love does not increase, or does his love diminish. Therefore, God's love cannot be changed by any form of human failure or vacillation. We vacillate from one thought to the next, from one desire to the next, from one circumstance to the next. God never changes. He is constant. He is as constant as he has always been from eternity past. And since he had no beginning nor end, God always is and God always remains constant. That's phenomenal. Wouldn't that be nice if we'd have that in our children as they're growing up? Little girls want to be nurses, doctors, this, that, librarian, so on and so forth and so on. They end up getting married and having 94 kids, you know, which is fine. Boys want to be firemen, policemen, boom, 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 and they go run the whole thing, you know, whatever new hat they have that day, that's what they want to be. So finally, one day, they get out into the work field, and that's what they are. It is true, you can be what you want to be with some regard. I don't like the statement wholly because there are some things that you can't be. I suppose if you wanted to be a crook, you could. You could opt to be one. You shouldn't. There are certain choices in life that you shouldn't make, even though you have the will to make them. You know, we can do anything. Did you know that? Anything. That is within reason, except defying certain aspects of God's divine laws, like gravity, for example. You say, well, in flight, you defy the law of gravity. Well, you see, you are committed to another law, and that's the law of aerodynamics. But I suggest to you that you release yourself from the law of aerodynamics and see what happens. That's called stepping out of the airplane at 60,000 feet. Do you think the law of gravity would take over right away? It sure would. You might fly for a while. You know, you could put your arms out, but eventually you'd come to a screeching thud. And that's called hitting the ground. And it's not Newton's law, it's God's law. I think we ought to start referring to these as discoveries rather than laws. It's amazing to me that nobody realized before Newton came along that things that went up had to come down. They were doing it all the time. I mean, wasn't there any thinkers that could reason that? Did Isaac Newton have to get hit by an apple on the head while he was sleeping under a tree? The amazing thing was, it was a peach tree. So somebody was up in the tree trying to teach him something. No, it wasn't. Don't believe a lot of the anecdotes. That's all they are. And they need antidotes sometimes. Point four, then, because God is immutable, his love does not increase. This is simply saying that God's love never changes because man changes. Point B, how can we love this person who is so imperfect? Since we are not perfect. And how can we love as God loves if his love is perfect? So point A, none of us are perfect. Most of us fall in love based on compatibility. But in the back of our minds, we oftentimes, get this now, we oftentimes connote in the life of the other some form of perfection. And there's where the illusion lies. In other words, he can do no wrong for a while. See, if you marry someone with the idea that they are imperfect, then you're not going to be shocked when you find out after marriage that they are imperfect. But if you have an illusion that this person that you're marrying is perfect, the only perfection is they're perfect for you. But they're not perfect for anybody else. And when that perfection inevitably sours, we're at a loss. Oh, what happened? What a disappointment. What a defeat. So how can we love this person then who is imperfect? You know that lies in the area of our arrogance, don't you? When we in any way ascribe to another member of the human race some form of perfection, when indeed they are equally as imperfect, if not more, than others. Why we do that with our loved ones, our spouses? Parents do that with their children. Oh, my child's perfect. Perfectly what? Perfectly obnoxious? A perfect brat? In some cases. Point C, so love becomes the basis for a tremendous amount of problems in life. Did you get that? Love is actually the basis for problems in life. Actually, please get this down, these problems should not be assigned to the word love simply because it isn't love. It either falls in this category, listen to it, arrogance, lust, lasciviousness, a defense mechanism, or getting even with someone who turned you down, Operation Boomerang. You know, you were going out with Susie Q, and there was Mary Jane in the... behind the scenes, waiting in the wings. Well, you didn't have much to do with Mary Jane because you had your eyes fixed upon Susie Q. But Susie Q finds Tarzan. And so you are dumped in the middle of a field with the rest of the cheetahs of life. And since you feel so cheated, the first thing you do is run off with Mary Jane, that poor woman. She's now married on the rebound. He didn't marry her because he loved her. He married her because he's trying to show this other one that, see, there is somebody that loves me. You know how many people do that? You know how many people have played that game over and over and over and over again? You know how many times that play has been acted? And with some, they have a 4 or 5 act play, i.e. 4 or 5 marriages, and they still don't get it right. Many times, they get the first marriage wrong, they dump the first one, and then they turn around and marry another one to prove to the first one that they can make it with the second one. Listen, if you dump the first one, you've got nothing to prove to the first one. But you do have an awful lot to prove to yourself. And I found generally the people that can't make it in these relationships are really not living under the concepts of love. They're just living under one of these areas. So let's quit calling it love. And let's call it what it really is. Young children, you know, they'll say, I remember when I was always running after the little girls. And well, I was a little boy. And I was in the fourth grade, and I had this this girl, her name was Connie. And I told her I loved her. And she told me she loved me. I knew about as much about love as the roach that was running along the wall when I told her that. Assuming there was one, and there had to be in the area that I came from. Of course, as soon as I moved out of that area, what happened to that love? That was directed toward another one. Some other Susie Q that came along. And all it really was I wanted to get her in the bushes, see? I remember I was in the fourth grade, so relax. And very naive. And I'm not going to tell you what we did in the bushes. I'll think about it a while. It was a pleasant experience. It's either lust, lasciviousness, a defense mechanism, or getting even with somebody. It's not love at all. Now, you've heard expressions, puppy love, infantile love, superficial love. Let me tell you something. Let's go back to my initial premise. The absence of God is the absence of love. And unless God is an integral part of your life, you do not possess that extra principle called love. It may be attraction. It may be compatibility. Not the compatibility of marriage, but rather just compatibility in likes and dislikes. Some people meet each other and they both like the same music, and right away they find out they love each other. No, they like the same music. And they say, don't you love it? We used to know one of the teenage girls that used to accompany our daughters. Now, every time she'd walk in the house, somebody would say something and say, don't you love it? Oh, a popper one. Wasn't she the klepto? Oh, eventually she got to the point where she said, don't you love it? And somebody did, and she got pregnant, right? Yeah, okay, that's the one. Unmarried, of course. Hey, you tell that to enough people, somebody's going to take you up on it. Don't you love it? And he said, sure. When? And she probably said, now. And that was it. Love is a general cover for all things. But none of these things are really love. Love becomes a cover for all kinds of failures, flaws, and weaknesses. Point E, the transitive verb love is one of the most abused words in our language. I told you that initially. We don't really have any synonyms for it. We don't even have indications of degrees. When we say love, it kind of is all-encompassing. Either you do or you don't. It's kind of like the word pregnant. There can be a degree of being pregnant, but not the status thereof. You can't say you're a little bit pregnant. So when we use the word love, generally in the English language, we very rarely qualify it. We just simply put it in a general category, and that means it's all-encompassing. I mean, do you love your wife the same as you do your dog? We use the expression, I love my dog. All right, see how general it is? Somebody said to me the other day, how do you like your Toyota? I said, I love it. And as I suggested to you the last week, I don't take it to bed with me. And I haven't kissed it lately. I don't expect to either. And I'm becoming disillusioned in my Cadillac after 20-some-odd years. Well, I've had it too long. It's time for change. So you're never going to get rid of that, are you? See how fast I get rid of it if somebody gives me an offer. Of course, I have to take the insurance company first and get the holes repaired in the convertible that the Hailstones put in the other day. That's one of the areas of my disillusionment. But I have non-deductible, so they said they'd fix it. So whoever gets it gets a new top. How's that? Tell you what I'm going to do. But I'm not looking at that the same as I would a wife. Now, I'm one to keep something a long time, obviously. But there's a time when you become practical about the situation. Looking at the same vehicle year after year after year, and I like it, but I'm not in love with it. So I think we can use other terms. I like it immensely. How's that? Whoa, do I like it? See, we have no real words. We have to go this. Or we have to quiver a little bit. I really love it. See, something like that. So love tends to cover everything, unfortunately. Point five, love can never be directed toward people and be successful apart from truth. One of the integral parts of true love is being truthful with each other. Truth is in establishment. Truth is in the gospel. Truth is in Bible doctrine. You wouldn't expect the doctrine would lie to you. You wouldn't expect the doctrine would misrepresent itself to you. Wouldn't it be awful? I mean, if something is stated in the Word and then you try to put it into practice and you find it doesn't work and then you get on the other side and God says to you, I just put that in there to trick you. Well, you say that can't be. Why? Because that would be contrary to his essence. Exactly. So when he says, I love you, my word is truth, see, you can stock on it. You can, never mind, bet on it. You can build your life upon it. Because let's face it, most of us have. Our eternal salvation is based on what? The truth of the Word of God. Unless you're sitting here and you're one of those that are still wondering. You know, I've known people that wondered for 10 years. I've never seen more arrogant people than people that wonder about their salvation. Their own arrogance stands in their way of ever committing to the concepts of the security of the believer. You see, they're distrustful. And you know what they're doing? They're questioning the integrity of God. Now, it is possible, of course, that in some cases they have never made a decision for the Lord Jesus Christ. But the few that I'm thinking about right now have made decisions. And they admit they've made decisions for Christ. And then they go around wondering. And every time you ask them something, or they ask you something, it always relates back to their issue about, well, I'm not even sure I'm really saved. Well, what do you want? A voice from heaven? And even if they heard that, they would doubt that it was really God speaking. That's what arrogance does, don't you see? That's why arrogance destroys a marriage. That's why arrogance destroys a relationship. Any kind of a relationship. Some people will never successfully date because they're so arrogant. And frankly, and I have to be truthful about this, I can't believe that some of you ever got past the hello stage. Now, I'll keep my eyes down lest they fall on you because you're here tonight. We've got people in this church that are really the most arrogant people I've ever met in my life. And it's obvious to me that in some cases you haven't grown an inch. And as long as you're in that state of arrogance, you're not going to grow an inch. Because you're always trying to put your ways and trying to conform it to God's ways. And you like it only when it conforms. Hey, I like that. Why? Because it conforms with my ideology. One of the things you have to learn very early in your Christian life is that you're a big zero when it comes to anything you can add to doctrine. And once you become totally subordinate to doctrine and realize there's nothing you can add to it but learn only from it, then you begin to reap its benefits. Do you think that there's anything inherently good in man that is able to fulfill the protocol plan of God or the demands of God in his absolute and perfect righteousness? That takes a lot of arrogance. Who, for example, was the forerunner of all arrogances on the face of the earth in Homo sapiens? Satan himself. What did he purport? That he would sit on the throne of God and he would be what? He would be God. And you say to yourself, well, how many times have you attempted to dethrone God in your life and you sit on the throne of your own life and make statements such as, I control my own destiny. And now we're back to horse feathers again, see? That's the biggest line of dung I've ever heard in my life. You control your own destiny. Some of you can't even drive straight, and you're controlling your own destiny. Can't even control your own automobiles. But see, that goes along with it too. I found some of the most reckless people on the highways are the most arrogant people on the highways. Why? Because they're oblivious of the fact that anybody else is around. He wouldn't dare hit me until he rips the fender off. I've been in one accident in 30 years, and I wasn't even moving. I was sitting still. And it's all my daughter Lori's fault anyway. No, it isn't. Weren't you going by right after the accident in my car? Yeah, okay. It's just as well. That was really a blessing in disguise because she took the Buick and we had to drive the Cadillac that day. Everybody told me if I had been in the Buick, we wouldn't be here today. So you see, there it is again, the providential circumstance of God in having Lori borrow the Buick so that we wouldn't be accordionized in the Buick. And there is a bit more metal of the Cadillac, you know. It only weighed about 2,000 pounds more than the Buick. I mean, it is a lot of car, 6,000 pounds. That's, of course, it does 6,000 pounds worth of gas mileage, too, you should know. There's a big 500 cube engine sitting under there, too. Much horsepower. Beat anything on the road, including service stations. Beats those to death. Now, let me read you this point slowly so you can get it. The type of love we are to have as believers in Jesus Christ is not based on any human standards. You cannot, in a state of ignorance of Bible doctrine, love God the Father or the Lord Jesus Christ. So what have I just said? The absence of doctrine equals the absence of love as well. Why? Because God has expressed his love in his person, and his person is expressed through his word. So if you're sitting there and you're ignorant of huge sections of the Word of God, you are also ignorant of huge sections of what constitutes love and the proper function thereof. So the few times that I've heard people come to me when I used to counsel, a woman said to me once, well, I was in love with him, but I fell out of love with him. And I thought to myself, I didn't have the guts then, but I will now. You never really knew the meaning of it, so how can you fall out of something you never had? Because once you are in love, it is so deep and it is so meaningful. It's not just security. It's not just a little scratch in the surface or written on the side of a tree. That's man's love, you see? That's man's expression. Defacing property. How many times have you seen it? Or now, I guess, the spray cans are popular on bridges and crossovers, walkovers, driveovers, whatever. Signs. I love so-and-so. Or a guy has an airplane flying by pulling a streamer saying, I love Susie Q. That's the best man can do. And generally speaking, that love is about as stable as the airplane in the air if it lost its prop. We're not talking about that kind of love. We're talking about a love that stems from an infinite, perfect God. And when that love begins to flood through the believer in right man, right woman, you have a relationship that is an unbeatable combination. You love God, God loves you, and you love your opposite number. Fantastic. I was going over these notes today, and I got so excited about it. I said, I'm not going to wait until I'm through with the doctrine of marriage to get into this. I'm going to use any excuse I can. I looked at the word virtue, and I said, well, that's close enough. We were studying active virtue, and there's the word. How about active virtue? The greatest of all active virtues, love. All right, virtue, love. Here we go. Point six, God has infinite energy and power with which to love. God's love exists eternally, unsustained by himself or by any other source. Now get this. Human love takes tremendous energy. Do you realize how much energy is expelled by a human being to love somebody? You know, it's much easier to hate them. It takes work to love somebody. It's not some superficial thing that drops from your lips. Well, do you love me? Yes, I love you. People do not realize that mentality and energy are major factors in love. Mentality, energy, expel, tremendous amount of energy. More energy than some can ever expel physically. And I'm sure that you are understanding what I'm talking about is not sexual love at this point. That's physical. And is the result of that mental exercise. But the mental attitude of love takes tremendous energies. What comes out of this? Put this down. A lot of people really aren't capable of love because they're always worn out. You see, their mind is too cluttered with other things. That has been proved over and over again with people that get so involved in the workforce. Working, of course, is a necessity. But there are some people, the businessman, his mind becomes so preoccupied and so cluttered with the information he's trying to do the work of five different people. It is inevitable. It is a guarantee that he has no room to develop the necessary energies to express his love to his wife. And eventually she begins to sense it. And the job really becomes what? The other woman.
thing.
Then, of course, she starts to nag. And so he's got a choice of 47 different secretaries that are available there that in most cases are dressed much prettier than his wife, because his wife has let herself go over the years. And when he comes home from work, she's either just gotten out of the shower or should have been in the shower. Okay? Ladies, if you want one of the clues, if you have the opportunity, unless you're working, of course, and you don't, but if you have the opportunity, you make his arrival when he walks into the house at night a time of pleasure for him. I mean, he's been beat to death out there on the workforce. And if you want to stand there in a transparent nightgown, that's fine. Just make sure it's him at the door when you open it. Don't do like that guy did when he was invited by his secretary to go up to a motel room. You've heard that story, of course. It was a surprise birthday party. He didn't know it. He ran into the bathroom and took all his clothes off. Came back out. Lights were out. Started feeling around for the bed. Lights went on. Surprise! What a surprise it was for him. Wife must have felt thrilled, too, to realize that that was his intention. I think he got a candle that night. His light went out. Point B, they do not have the energy to think, and if you don't have the energy to think, you do not have the energy to love. You know why? Because love is thinking. See, some of you think, that love is doing. No, it isn't. Love starts and is rooted in thinking. And by the way, you know as well as I do that what takes more energy? Physical expression or mental expression? Mental. I am more exhausted after Sunday morning and Sunday evening than if I've tried to paint the house in one day. That would be an absolute terror to even think about it, especially at this time of the year. Then my wife says, well, it's cooler now. I say, it's too cold. We'll have to wait till it warms up again. And, of course, it starts to warm up. She says, don't you think it's time? A little bit warmer. Now it's too hot. But we both use the same excuse. Maybe we say, well, wait till John gets a little older. That doesn't work either. Because he's always got something else to do. We can always find other things to do than what we really want to do, right? Sometimes we expel more energy physically trying to get away from the very work that we should be involved in. But there's nothing more taxing than mental labor. How do you feel, for example, for those of you that still do them? You sit down the night before and you decide you are going to cram for your income tax return. Get it done before midnight. It's a lot different than sitting in front of the tube and watching it for the same amount of time. Let's say it took you 4 hours. Say 5 hours. So you watched a 4.5 hour program on TV. You wouldn't be as taxed. But boy, you are dead. And those of you that work more with your mind than you do with your bodies, you know what I'm talking about. You come home tired. Well, what I'm saying to you is caution. Allow room for thinking. Because that's where all love is rooted. Don't allow your mind to be so cluttered that it pushes out the one essential thing that keeps your marriage together, and that is mental attitude love. There's where real love lies. Not in the flowers and the candies and the cards and all that stuff. That's simply the expression. And ladies, I hope you're not that superficial to think because he gives you all those things, he loves you. That might be a cover-up. And if he didn't give them to you before and all of a sudden he does, question him. Some women are so superficial, they get something and right away, oh, he loves me. Well, he gave you a rose? The only rose would be worth getting rid of would be the one with the beehive. I can't even say it, governor. And when I think of a governor, I think of a man, first of all. Then I think of somebody that can think. And somebody that doesn't have lashes that bang into other people when she closes her eyes. And who I'm afraid might smile and face crack all over the place. And half of her face drop to the floor. And can think. But we didn't vote her in, right? So we can't say anything. But we'll sure vote her out. Well, we won't have to. She gave up. All right. That in Greek, by the way, is praise God. Point seven. God is sovereign, which means that all his decisions to love are just as perfect as he is. We have been given our own free will as a part of the function of human history, and therefore we have volition to make those decisions with regard to love. Point eight, divine love is self-motivating and totally compatible with God's perfect essence. This is all leading to something, by the way. It's all leading to how this can be expressed in the life of the believer in marriage. Don't you see, all the sources that I'm talking about are from one ultimate source, God. And therefore, if you're ever going to have a meaningful relationship in love, it must come from the only source of love. Look, there is no other source of love other than that sheep, superficial nonsense that we talk about. I love this, we love this, we, and so on. That's human love. That's human standard love. We're not talking about that. That's not going to make your marriage successful. That's not going to give your marriage meaning or purpose or definition. But divine love permeating the areas of every detail of your life. And if you don't have that now, don't give up now. If you haven't tried it. Some people are so stupid, they've never gone so far as to even enter into that relationship, and they want to quit before they ever even try. Well, I never really loved you. That may be true. I never thought of that. That may be true. But then you'd have to admit to yourself, the one to whom that word was just said, you may not have either. Why? Because God was not an integral part of your marriage. Don't get by with this human standard love. I love that music. And then there comes a time when you don't love that music. But don't you see, when divine love has permeated a relationship, that love is as stable as God's love. Are you getting this? And you say, what's it called? Virtue love. Remember that whole list, does not behave itself unseemly, is not contentious, is not jealous, is not bitter. Don't you understand that there's something that could be said right there? It cannot be. That's what's understood. It cannot be jealous. It cannot be bitter. You know what some people have done? They've read that list, and what they've tried to do is fulfill the list to equal the love. Are you still with me? Here's the list. This is the list that describes the love. All right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So now they say, all right, I'm going to work on these with the idea that the result will be love. And if I do these, then I'll have this. That's not what the passage is teaching. Now, you can all tell me, because of the way I've led you this evening, I've almost forced you to this conclusion. I've used Greek philosophy on you. I've got your heads going this way, you see. You can't say no at this point. What comes first? This! And what is the expression of this? These! See? Not that these equal this, but rather that this results in these. And once you have this, then you have these. For instance, love is not jealous. So you say, well, if I'm going to love somebody, then I can't be jealous of that person. So I'll work on my jealousy. No! No! It's the best I can do. Years ago, I used to jump in the air and hit my feet twice. And it wasn't too long ago either. Nancy remembers. I try it now, you'd find me in a puddle down here. Especially when the left ankle goes. I'd have to come down on one. And then I wouldn't know what would happen after that. Yeah, with the flags coming out of each side. Yeah. Greek flags, right? Yeah. That's an inside joke. This love is derived from the source of God. It's divine love. It's virtue love. See, God, only God possesses virtue love. And say, oh, I'm not going to be jealous. I'm going to work on that. And then that. No. Get to this place and you won't have jealousy. Get to this place and you won't be vindictive. Get to this place and you won't act implacably. Because divine love or virtue love is not implacable. See? It doth not behave itself unseemly. How about this one? Vaunteth not itself. Is not easily provoked. See, you say, well, I got to work on that. Yeah, I got to work on my temper. No, you don't. Work on this. And that'll control your temper. Because when the love of God takes over, what happens? The temper's gone. Why? Because you're now treating that person in virtue love. And if you could control your temper, why do you need God? If you could work it out. See, there's human effort again. There's that ability, there's that arrogance. Now, he's right. I've got to work on my temper. If I work on my temper, if I get my temper down. And a lot of pastors in dealing with couples do the very same thing. They read this list and they say, well, which one of these are you guilty of? And they say, oh, this one, that. Well, you better work on those. No, stupid. That guy's just as arrogant as the one he's trying. See, he may not have a problem with that, so he can be really, oh, you have a temper? This guy's passive. Why? Because he's married to Brunhilde, you know. She's been running the church for the last 15 years and running his life for the last 20. He can't even counsel a flea, much less a couple. That's why I quit counseling. Everybody to listen to me. They didn't. I gave them the greatest advice. They didn't listen to me. And why should I have all these beautiful thoughts just wasted? Phenomenal thoughts. I talked to my kids over and over and over and over again. If they only took a tenth of what I told them, they wouldn't have some of the heartaches they had. But kids are stupid. And then they come up with this, here's a beauty, and I'm sure you said it, and I said it, we've all said it. Well, I guess there are just some things that I have to learn for myself.
Yeah, go ahead, step in the bucket. So you learn not to step in the bucket. But why not move the bucket out of the way? So you don't have to step in it. Well, I'll never really know what it means unless I step in the bucket. You say, bucket of what? Whatever the bucket of what happens to be. Do you understand? Why? Because we have that in the back of our mind that experience is the best teacher, and it isn't. It's the worst. What's the best teacher? Doctrine is the best teacher. I'm not even the best teacher. Unless I'm teaching doctrine. And then I'm not the best teacher because I'm teaching doctrine. It's because it's the doctrine that's the best teacher. And it just happens to be coming through me. That's right. And it doesn't matter who it comes through. If this thing could speak and doctrine come out of it, it's the best teacher. Don't you see? Too often we look at the human vessel. No! Get the teaching. Forget the me. But some pastors like the me. Oh, look at me. And they have a crowd. They have little groupies there every Sunday morning. 10,000 groupies. Groupies, the right word? Close enough. Almost sounds like some kind of a strange fish. Groupie. That's grouper, isn't it? The one for the grouper? Oh, that's Gipper. I thought a Gipper was somebody who walked with a limp. Oh, that's a Gimper. Okay. No, my wife and I play this game all the time. Look. In conclusion, look, love. There's the love. And where did it come from? It came from God. That's the virtue love that we ought to possess. And where are we going to get it? From His Word. Night by night. Next time you say to somebody, I love you, sit back and analyze it, would you? Ask yourself a question. On what basis am I saying this? And then inevitably you say, well, I like them, I love them because... And you will start listing some characteristics of the individual. Well, that's fine, but that's human standard love. That can have a part. Don't misunderstand me, please. That certainly has... Something has to start somewhere. Do you think when my wife and I got married... The minute I said I do, that all of a sudden this huge envelope of virtue love surrounded me? Wouldn't that be nice?